Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Many of us are anxious about the state of our country. We have a president who ignores the rule of law. We have a Republican-led Senate which refuses to hold the president accountable. We have an attack on truth and facts and an effort to mislead and confuse people. What can we do? Of course, we're all going to vote on Tuesday, November 3rd. Our guest today has another reason for being hopeful. Cedric Alexander believes that government workers can help save our republic. And he just wrote a book making that case titled, In Defense of Public Service, How 22 Million Government Workers Will Save Our Republic. Cedric Alexander has over 40 years' experience in public safety. He was police chief in two major cities, a deputy mayor of Rochester, New York, and professor of clinical psychology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. In 2015, President Obama appointed Mr. Alexander to the Task Force on 21st Century Policing. He's here with us today to talk about how government workers will save our republic. Cedric Alexander, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you very much. And the first name is pronounced Cedric.
Cedric, of course. Thank you, Cedric.
So,
I so appreciate you writing this book, and I think it's important to find rays of hope where we can in these dark times. You're focusing on government workers, and we know we've got three branches of government, legislative, executive, and judiciary. You say government workers are the fourth branch of government. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, let's take into account that in this country we do have three branches of government, just as you just articulated, judiciary, legislative, and executive branch. And what is supposed to happen with those three branches of government is that they all keep each other in check. It provides a balance for our nation. That is the checks and balances, and everyone must do their part and stay within their lane in each one of those divisions of our nation, and that what makes us the great nation that we are. But there also is what I refer to as the fourth branch. That is all of us, the citizens of this country, the 300 million people that make up this United States of America. And, of course, the 22 million Americans who serve us in the military, local, state, and the federal employment system. So they, to me, are the fourth branch. They are the branch of people, and that's the American people, who have influence over our elected officials, and who themselves, who are unofficially a branch of government, but at the end of the day, the three branches of government serves that fourth branch, and that is the American people, who have a tremendous impact on each one of those branches of government from which in the communities in which they live.
Right, and you're talking about people working in public service at every level of government. We've got people, of course, at the federal level, the federal government, but also at the local and state government. And you talked powerfully about how government servants are the ones, really they're the face of government, they're the operations of government, they're the ones that protect the environment, protect our public health, put out fires, collect trash, plow the snow. That really, you know, without these public servants, there really wouldn't be much in the government at all. Is that right?
That's correct. Of those individuals, the power of those 22 million people that serve us every day are truly what make us the great nation that they are, because they're the ones who keep our government going each and every day. If you look at our national weather system, and those who are responsible for keeping track of our weather and our atmosphere, if we look at air traffic controllers, if we look at the men and women who keeps our communities and street clean, if we look at the public safety officials, we look at the support staff of all of those organizations, they all do a tremendous job, and they are the ones who truly keep this nation going. Elected officials will come and go. every 2 years, every 4 years, every 8 years. But those career employees, they're the backbone of this nation. Our military and those who serve in every form of government, including our contractors, and many as well that are in the private sector. These are the people who keep this nation going every day. And those, and that's the premise of this book, is to discuss and talk about them and the great work and the commitment and the courage and the sacrifice that they make every day to keep this nation strong.
Exactly right. And my father was a police officer, as were you early in your career. So I have great respect for our public servants who go out, put their lives on the line every day to keep us safe, and the many, many other activities they perform without which our country just couldn't run. I find it interesting that your book title is In Defense of Public Service. What do you think public servants need to be defended from?
Could you repeat that question one more time?
Yes. Your book title is In Defense of Public Service, and I'm wondering, what do you think public servants need to be defended from?
Well, when I wrote that, In Defense of Public Servants, it is, they're not to be defended, but they are to be acknowledged. And to be acknowledged in the sense that the work they do is so important. If you remember, right after the 2016 election, as we were going into 2017 with this new administration, they came under a lot of assault, many of our public servants, those in the intelligence community and certain individuals and persons within our federal law enforcement ranks. They came up under a great deal of scrutiny. And I can only imagine within those organizations how they must have felt merely because of the great work that they do every day. And even if we go to a state and local level, many times across this country, our career employees sometimes don't feel appreciated. And people may have varying ideas about the work they do and how they do it and question their legitimacy. But this book was written for us to recognize that the sacrifice that they make. For an example, if we go back and if we look at the shutdown a year and a half ago in this nation, and if you recall so vividly how the men and women in the Forest Service, our national weather people who work for the government, our air traffic controllers, our street sweepers, those who manage the checkpoints in our at our airports to keep us safe as we board these airplanes. If we think about the air traffic controllers, we think about all those people who were affected by the shutdown and who not even received pay for 1, 2, 3 pay periods. They came to work, they stayed focused on the mission, and even though the shutdown had nothing to do with them, they held their positions, they kept this nation safe, and they stayed encouraged. And then we saw the rest of the nation, the rest of American citizens, come to their rescue, supported them, provided services that they needed. We saw that with our military and those who supported our military men and women and those who also supported our employees in the federal government. This book is dedicated to them and for us to recognize that we need to defend them. Not that they need it to be defended in the sense of they're doing something wrong, but we need to acknowledge the great work that they do in spite of the challenges sometimes that we, a nation, may be confronted with.
Absolutely right. And it would be good to acknowledge the public servants more, and they do incredible work every day that goes often unrecognized and unappreciated. And I know on some of the attacks now are coming from people who claim that government workers are part of a deep state. Now, you've been in government work for over 40 years. What do you think about these attacks on government workers as part of a deep state?
Government workers are not part of a deep state. There is no clandestine group of individuals at any level of our government
that's working underground and behind or beside or behind the scenes to overthrow our nation. These are dedicated men and women who go out and do their jobs every day. And we need to be there to support them and to provide them with the support that they so much need. And we see that. We see the support that comes from them at a variety of different levels in our nation's government. But we also must recognize and be very cautious and careful how we criticize and ridicule them as an organization, because you cannot paint an entire group of people with a broad brush. These people who work in public service, our career employees, I can be appointed tomorrow as Secretary of Defense. You can be appointed as a CIA director in this country. But one thing's for sure, every 48 years, you and I are going to rotate out, either in a new administration or something, but we're going to rotate out. But what stays are the career folks. It's the career people who stay there through each change of leadership at our federal, state, and oftentimes even local governments. And they're the ones who know what needs to be done, how it needs to be done. They have made up the legacy and the history of those agencies and those departments that have been passed down from generation and generation of employees. So we should not minimize them or marginalize them in any kind of way, but recognize that what they hold so dear, and that is the safety of this nation and a commitment and loyalty to this nation, no matter who's at the head of the helm today, they will continue to be there, and they should not be minimized. But, however, if they're not doing their jobs, they're not doing the things they're supposed to be doing, yes, they need to be held accountable. No one is going to dismiss that fact. But we also have to keep in mind those public servants, those career folks, the greatest majority of them, and I mean the greatest majority of them, go out every day and provide great public service and public safety to us each and every day across this country.
Absolutely true. And in your book, you talk about civil servants as being agents of community restoration. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by agents of community restoration?
These are people who live inside our community. You know, we talk about civil servants employees. We talk about career employees. They're not foreign. They're just like you and I. They're part of our communities, part of our neighborhoods, our schools, our churches, the history that they bring into their communities to help restore communities, to help restore the legitimacy of their job workplaces. Those people play a tremendous job in the reputation and the integrity that this country holds every day. No person, regardless of what their title may happen to be or how much money they may happen to make, they all play such an important job in helping us maintain the dignity and respect, not only in this country, but more importantly, around the globe. And it's those civil servants, it's those career folks who help us do that each and every day that they go to work and in this nation. And not only in this nation, they also serve us globally as well.
That is so true. Now, you've got a foreword in this book by the late, great Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland, who recently passed away. Did you know him personally?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Did you know Congressman Elijah Cummings personally?
Did you ask, did I know him?
Yes.
I did not know him personally, but I will tell you how I met him. I had the opportunity back in May of 2019, last year, to testify before Congress on artificial intelligence and more specifically facial recognition. And I was there representing the face of law enforcement, or public safety, if you will. And there was others there who were from the ACLU and those that were from some of the reputable research institutions across this country, such as MIT. And we sat there talking about the benefits a course of artificial intelligence, facial recognition, and some of the challenges that are still associated with it. But long story short, at the end of that testimony, I had an opportunity to go up to Congressman Cummings and shake his hand and share with him some similar thoughts that we've had, and also had an opportunity to share with him the book that was in manuscript form at that time. And I asked him, would he be willing to read the manuscript and see if it held true to many of the thoughts and values that he's had around public service? And as you well know, and many of us well know, that he was a strong supporter of public servants in the federal government and state government at the local level. Great deal of respect and admiration for that population of people in our society. And he gladly accepted that invitation. I forwarded my manuscript to him. And 3 months later, he responded with a beautifully written foreword, as you have seen. And it really speaks to where we are in the nation at this moment, but not in a critical way. He responded in a way that highlighted the concerns that we all have sitting on both sides of the aisle. But he also talked about how we need to challenge ourselves and work together to resolve our issues, particularly around hyperpartisanship. So it was a beautifully crafted, beautifully written foreword. And I would encourage anyone that's out there is to take a look at the book, get a copy of it, In Defense of Public Service, How 22 Million Americans Will Help Save Our Republic. And I think they will see in that foreword, not just read it, but they will feel the essence of what it is that Congressman Cummings was referring to. And the book in itself, I think, will support all that he wanted and all that he saw that we are capable of doing when we're joined together in this nation.
That's true. Now, Congressman Cummings dedicated his life to truth and justice from the civil rights movement right up to his last breath. And in the foreword to your book, which, as you say, is beautifully written, he decries the power that's seeking to divide us. And he's concerned about the attacks on our institution of government and, in fact, the attack on truth itself. I'm wondering how you think the 22 million government workers can respond to these attacks on our institutions and on truth itself.
Well, I don't think it's just left up to those 22 million civil servants, to those career employees, to those military people. I think it's incumbent upon all of us, all 300 million of us in this nation, to make sure that we understand that there's so much information out there. And certainly through social media, you can go to any website that you want to support whatever it is that you believe in, whatever it is you believe in. There's a lot of negative information that is out there. There's a lot of wrong information, misleading information, hateful information that's out there. But we as Americans must find ways, and they're there, to make sure that whatever we are reading, particularly as it relates to news, whether it's around politics, whether it's around our daily living, whatever it may happen to be, we must reach out and search for credible, verifiable information that will lend itself to us to make sure that we're operating in the very best spirit. We're operating in the very best spirit of our nation and making sure that the information that we deliver is credible and what we reading is credible. And that's our responsibility in order to do that. And there's a lot of responsible journalism that is out there. And even if it's being disputed by sources, but when you start talking about credible news organizations like the Times and the Post and our national media outlets, they have to gather information not only from a source, but they verify it And we have to look for verifiable information. And that is what important, and not just the first thing that we read, but look for sources that provide us with information that is going to be beneficial to our reading, our digesting of that information, and making sure that we're operating with truths and not with fictions and misleading lies.
That's great. Well said. So we're going to need to take a brief break right now. And as we do that, then we'll be reconnected, Mr. Alexander. After this brief break, we will reconnect and carry on the conversation.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
It's not liberal, it's not conservative, it's progressive, the truth that empowers, right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am your host.
Hello, Mr. Alexander, it's Eleanor LeCain. We're back talking about public servants.
I'm here.
Excellent. So I love that you talk about kind of the fact-based way that most civil servants work, and you have a whole section, which I love because it's so important to have research that's accurate. And you talk about the Congressional Research Service that members of Congress use, and it gives them all kinds of information drawing on the incredible Library of Congress. You talk about the Congressional Budget Office, which gives straight data on, information about our budget and financing. But I am concerned about the attacks on, say, for example, the Congressional Budget Office, that now there's people trying to undermine the Congressional Budget Office precisely so they can substitute their partisan opinion for what would actually be real facts about spending and the budget. So what do you see happening in terms of the Congressional Budget Office? Are those attacks serious, and how do we, the people, help defend these sources of facts and evidence-based reality to help guide our policymakers?
Well, I truly think it becomes important for all of us as American citizens to be able to pay attention when we hear these things that are being said about a variety of different branches inside our government. And when we have real question, that's the reason why we have elected congressional members. That's the reason why we have U.S. senators in our state, in our district. And to be able to call them and defer to them and ask them questions about if we feel that somehow any branch or any division or any department in our government is being challenged or recklessly in some form or fashion attacked. Because then we can ask them, we can ask our congressional representatives, our U.S. senators across this country, to give us insight and to tell us more, and hold them accountable to sharing with us what the truth is. But to be able to find and seek that comes from us taking some responsibility for the people that we vote for, and ask them, what is this that we're hearing? What are these attacks and that appears to be attacks, and what is truth and what is fiction? But to be able to read and to pay attention and make decisions for ourselves.
Right, exactly. So you talk, among many of the great activities and responsibilities of civil servants, is enforcing government regulation. And I know, you know, that can sometimes be a word that people use to say, oh, we have way too much government regulation, it's too expensive, it's too time-consuming. And you trace some of that regulation back to a century ago when Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle, showing the need for people to be protected from companies that cut corners to make money and can jeopardize public safety in doing it. And we've seen recently problems with in the airline industry with the Boeing Corporation cutting corners on their airplanes and having two airplanes be sunk down, in part because the federal agencies were told to kind of, you know, back off and not be so attentive on oversight. But what do you see in terms of how can civil servants who want to do their jobs actually be effective at it if they're being told from the top to look the other way and not be so active about enforcement of regulations?
Well, it becomes a responsibility of every employee, quite frankly, not to do anything that's wrong. And if they know that anything criminally or ethically is in question, then it becomes their responsibility to do something about it. And not merely because someone tells you this is what you need to do, and in your heart and mind and based on policy and law, you know it's not right, then we have a responsibility to become that whistleblower. You have the responsibility to say something and to help get others involved so that you won't feel alone. But that's the reason why we have a whistleblower act in this country. And even though it has the appearance right now being challenged, I think the American people at the end of the day are still going to exercise their right to stand up for what is right. And they're going to be willing to take whatever hit comes along with that. And they're not going to be intimidated by a boss or by anyone else. Because that is something that all of us are going to have to always be able to do. And that is within our own conscience, with our own human being self, is to be able to stand up for what's right and to make sure what we do, we're doing it ethically, we're doing it morally, we're doing it legally. And if anyone else tries to take us in an entirely different direction, then we certainly have to be the ones that say, no, that's not going to be acceptable.
Right. And, you know, speaking of taking a stand for ethics and doing what's morally right, we've seen recently several examples of civil servants who were very courageous and whistleblowers, alerting the country to the shakedown from the White House to Ukraine and the cover-up. And they risked their jobs and in some cases risking their lives and now getting threats, death threats, for standing up and telling the truth about what happened. So I think, you know, there's some recent evidence of what you're saying about having these civil servants who are working in government really wanting to have, you know, to tell the truth about what's going on. So do you have any comment about that recent situation?
Well, I think all American people saw for themselves what took place. They heard and they saw the testimonies. I think every American citizen knows within their heart what they know to be true and what it is to be questionable. And the Americans across this country are going to hold all of their elected officials at every level of government responsible to things that they have a great deal of concerns about. And I think it is now left up to the American people. But you did see courageous people come forth and who testified an oath of what they saw and heard. And, of course, that had to be challenged, and rightly so. It should have been challenged. And it was left up to a system that led to the outcome in which it did. And some people will agree with the outcome. Others won't. But I'm not here to challenge any of that, because at the end of the day, this is truly about the American people and the decisions that they make at their own dinner table and in their own hearts and their own minds in terms of what they're going to need to do in order to resolve that within themselves. And we have a new election coming up in November of this year. And American people across this nation will have an opportunity to make a decision about how they want this nation led. And regardless of whether you like the current administration or not, that is administration. That is the administration that is that leads this nation. And if people want more of that, then there will be those who will go to the polls and vote in that direction, and there'll be those who will go to the polls and vote in another direction. But at the end of the day, the American people will be able to make a decision and vote for himself. And whatever the outcome is, that is what this nation, that is what the people of this nation voted upon, and that is what it becomes.
True, and I hope everybody does go vote. It's Tuesday, November 3rd, so we really want to have everybody turning out to express your opinion. It's a bedrock of our government. And we absolutely need some new leadership in there. But another issue that has come up just within the past couple of weeks is that the president informed the Secretary of Defense that he no longer had to do collective bargaining with the workers who are in the union. As you know, there's a federal union for federal government workers. And there's a big meeting of the unions just a couple of days ago, and they were talking about trying to defend their right to organize. Do you have any comment on that situation? And
I don't have any comment. I'm not abreast of that. I don't like to talk about things in which I don't know about, so I really cannot in any kind of way talk about that with any kind of depth and breadth.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've got about over 40 years of experience as a public servant yourself. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the headlines of what kind of public service you have given during your career?
Yeah, I mean, I started out as a young deputy sheriff years ago in law enforcement and in Tallahassee, Florida. And I went on to serve in another number of other departments across the nation and to be able to
serve for the next 42 years at virtually every level of government, from the local, state, and federal level. And during the course of my career, I, like you, have seen a lot of leadership across this country come and go. But at the end of the day, as I've stated a moment ago, the American people get to elect who they want to lead this country. The American people elected a new president in 2016. And so whether we like the current administration or not, that's who the American people elected. And what I've learned through the course of my career as a public servant, and you will see this among many public servants in this country, we do not care who's at the helm. What we're concerned about is the mission and to be able to carry out that duty, because we all have worked from Democrats, we work for Republicans, we work for independents, we work for everyone. And we're going to continue to do the things that are in the best interests of this nation, regardless of who may be president. Because the one thing about those 22 million Americans, they all have a party affiliation. They all believe in a certain philosophical a party or belief, but in the function of their job and their duty, they do what is best at the best interests of this country.
Right. And so I'm interested in your subtitle in your book is How 22 Million Government Workers Will Save Our Republic. And I agree with you. I think most of the people who are in public service, kind of they have their opinions and they kind of check them at the door and do their jobs. But what is it about them that makes you say that 22 million government workers will save our republic?
They're the 22 million that get it done for us every day. They're our military. They're our people who work in federal government, both at the local, state, and federal level, who go out there and get it done for us every day, and regardless of who's in charge or head of government in their local community, state, or federal government, those people are career employees. And as I've stated earlier, those are the folks who and in many cases work for whomever's in charge. But they don't work for a party. They work for the people. And they go to work and they do that. And that is what the book outlines, is that they work for the people. They don't work for a party. And regardless of who's at the helm. But those are the 22 million people that I'm referring to. And they're the ones that have provide us with the support that we need every day in order to keep our nation going.
Absolutely. Now, you talk about in your book how we've always had partisanship in our politics. You quote George Washington, our first president, talked about some of those divisions, but that's different than the hyper-partisanship that we've been experiencing in recent years. How do you draw that distinction? What do you think is different about the hyper-partisanship now?
Well, first of all, let me say this. This didn't start with Trump. It did not start with President Trump. It probably started back with the Obama administration. And it may even start it before then. We've always had partisanship in government right from the beginning. But now we at this place, however we got here, and we got here over time, and we can't just blame this on one particular president. We got here to where we are over time. But there is a division where we no longer, our elected officials who we hold responsible, and particularly at the congressional level and at the executive level, we hold them responsible to carry out a job and a mission for us, and we expect for them to conduct themselves as such. But being so between the two of them, the back and the forth and the back and the forth, the American people are tired of it, and they're tired of it from both sides of the aisle. So done in this country without all the divisiveness that comes along with it. Because they're the role models, they're the ones in which we all look to and follow. And they must not ever forget that in all that they do. They should not ever forget that.
Right. So you have spoken eloquently about public servants as people who are acting, who are the government essentially, and do incredible work every day to keep our country running and keep us safe. What, though, could this group of unelected people do to save us from a government that's potentially corrupt?
Well, I'm not going to operate from that premise that this government is corrupt. I think at the end of the day, the American people, everybody don't feel that way. Everybody don't see this nation or this administration as being corrupt. There are those who may, but there are just as many who don't. But here's the thing we cannot forget. Whatever is taking place or not taking place in our Congress or that executive or legislative branch, it is just not the fault of those elected officials. It's the fault of all of us as American citizens, because we have some responsibility. We get to go vote. We get to decide who we want to see in those offices. And if they are they upholding what we want to them to uphold? If they do, then that's fine. If they don't, then you have an opportunity to do something very different. You have an opportunity to go cast your vote in a direction that you feel that this nation should be going. But someone may call a certain administration corrupt. They called the Obama administration corrupt. They call this administration corrupt. But I'm not going to use that kind of language to define our American government and system. But the American people do have the responsibility to question what they see and hear that's going on. And they have the responsibility to hold their elected officials at executive and legislative positions accountable to them. Because if people sit back, they don't say nothing, they do nothing, then you can't blame that on your elected officials. They work for you. You don't work for them. So we as Americans, we as voters in this country, let's stop using the negative language that keeps us divided, but let's make a decision when you go to those polls and people that you send to represent you. The question the American people have to ask themselves, and I don't care what side of the aisle you sit on, is this the best thing for my community, for my state, for my federal government? It comes back to the voter, and we got to stop blaming all the elected officials for everything that's going on. They will do no more than what you will allow them to do if you don't speak up or you don't go vote.
True, and I would you can make the same argument about elected officials that you make about the government workers, that most elected officials are people like us. They're from our communities. Maybe if they're state reps or city councilors, state senators, even members of Congress, they come out of our communities. And I do agree with you that we, the people, need to take responsibility for who's in there, and if we don't like them, vote in some new people. I was very concerned. You know, we talked a lot in the 2016 election about, you know, basically a quarter of the vote went to Donald Trump, and a quarter of the vote plus 3 million went to Hillary Clinton, but about 50% of the people who would be eligible to vote didn't vote at all. And I'm very concerned about people thinking it doesn't matter and staying home and not bothering, and that they're just like ceding their power. If you're not voting, you shouldn't have any basis for complaining, because you need to get on the field and express your views and your vote in the voting poll. So,
and if you're not voting, if you're not taking part of what's going on in your community, locally or nationally, and you're not voting, then you shouldn't be calling your nation corrupt. What you should be doing trying to get to the root of what it is that is bothersome and troublesome for you as an individual, talking to your politicians, paying attention to what they're saying, and then paying attention to what, if they're doing what they say they're going to do. Because at the end of the day in all of this, this does come back to the American voter. And the American voter in this country has the right to exercise that. But staying home and then complaining is not going to resolve what's going on. Because at the end of the day, people who go out and vote, and whatever side of the aisle they vote for is their prerogative. But whoever we end up with in charge of this nation or in charge of our local communities, the people have spoken. So this is what we have. And if people want something different, then they have to do something different. And they have to go out, and we have to cast our vote. And whoever wins, win. And whoever wins, we respect that office. You may not like the person, but we always respect the office of the presidency. We always respect the office of leadership. And that's what we all have to remember at the end of the day. Everybody is not going to like you or your show, but what we do want is for people to respect your show and what it is that you do. People have liked me as a police chief, and there are those who have not, but they respect the office of that I hold at that time. But people are not necessarily always going to like the individual.
All right. Well, I found it very interesting in your book that you've been in law enforcement quite a bit. You've been a police chief twice, and you talk about the power of police, that, you know, they get an authority by virtue of their position, which, you, of course, we should all be respecting. And at the same time, they need to behave in certain ways that earn the respect of the community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Police have an exceptionally tough job, as we all very well know. But we do owe to our men and women who are out there and serve for us, we do owe them respect, and we do owe them our support, because they have a very good job, a very tough job to do. And they committed a lot to be able to do that. But we also, as citizens, must hold our public safety responsible, that they're out there doing their job and working at the best interests of the community. Because here's how I would summarize this in your question. You cannot have public safety without police officers and public safety officials. You also cannot have strong communities without its citizenry. Police and communities are partners. They are two of the same. I just chose one day as a profession to go out and be a police officer, a firefighter, emergency individual who works in emergency management. But I live and work in that community. I am that community, and that community is me, is what Sir Robert Peel, the father of policing, said many, many, many years ago. So there's a shared responsibility. Many police departments across this country today are working closely with the communities in which they serve. Have some challenges, been very tough over the years. If we go back and look at the history of policing in this nation, yes, they have. But we've also seen tremendous gains where police and community work together to provide and make sure that there's good public safety there for all of us. So we can't dismiss our police. We can't rein. We can't paint them all with the same brush. But we do have a responsibility to hold our public safety accountable, and we also have the responsibility to make sure that they have the support from us as citizens in a community, to help them keep our communities safe and to help protect them doing a very difficult job when they're doing it legally and constitutionally.
Right, I agree. I mean, as I mentioned, I saw my father go off every day to work as a police officer, and every day put his life on the line to help the community stay safe. What are some specific things you think people can do to be working with police officers to keep their communities safe?
To reach out to your police agencies, reach out, meet your chiefs, meet your district commanders, but meet your chiefs of police, meet your fire chiefs, meet your emergency management directors. Get to know them, invite them to your community organizations, and invite them into your communities. They're there to serve you, but they need your support. And it is so much better for all of us when we open up our hearts and open up ourselves to move past what our differences are, but to operate in a way in which we look at public safety and providing public safety in our community as a partnership. And it is a partnership. And you have so many police agencies across this country every day who are out there doing that. And they're reaching out to communities. Communities are reaching back. There is no other way. There is no exception. And we have to make sure we keep our police departments well-trained, well-equipped, and we have to make sure that we pay them well. We give them good salary and good benefits. But we also, and that's for all our public safety officials, by the way, but also we hold them accountable to do a job without bias, without prejudice, and to be able to do it in a way that is professional in nature, and to be there to support our public safety when they need our support, and for our public safety to understand that the public needs them, the public wants them, it is a partnership, and they are responsible to the people in which they are sworn to protect.
Yes, that sounds great. Support them and also hold them accountable. That's exactly what we need to do with the police, with our elected officials, with our government workers. One more question before we go off. You have that you worked for President Obama on the task force on 21st century policing. What was that experience like, and what were the recommendations that came out of that task force, and what's happened because of that task force?
Recommendations that came out of that task force back in 2015, and before President Obama left office, a lot of those recommendations were implemented across the country, and many police departments still to this day use that document as a roadmap to help move them forward in building relationships between police and community. And it was a great experience, meeting with him on several occasions, myself and 10 other members of the task force. It was a great experience, have an opportunity to bring all your years of experience together, myself, Chuck Ramsey, Ron Davis, and others who were part of that task force. We just had a wonderful time serving our nation at the request of the President of the United States at that time. And we would do it again, if asked to serve by any U.S. president, because I don't think there's nothing any greater than being able to serve your country when asked to do so, regardless of who is in leadership. So it was a great experience for us, and I think in many ways, that document, which you can still find up online, 21st Century Task Force Report 2015, and here again, that document is still being utilized across this country. So I'm very proud to have been that part of Americans' history to help move forward, to help continue to help move forward the progression of building relationships between police and community.
That's great. And if people want to learn more about your work, they can check out, tell us again the name of your book and how they can learn more.
In defense of public servants, in defense of public service, : how 22 million Americans will help save our republic. by Cedric Alexander. And I'm also up on Twitter at C Alex underscore law. And feel free to hit me up on Twitter. But I think you will find the book to be a very interesting read. And it is nonpartisan, because for me, this is not about leaning one way or another, but just presenting the facts as they are and letting American people make a decision for themselves. But that's my contribution.
Wonderful. Well, that's all the time we have. Cedric Alexander, thank you for being with us today, and thank you for all your great years of public service.